This morning, we are digging into the second in our Advent series of sermons called Follow Your Dreams. We talked a little last week about how this is not a rah-rah, follow your dreams, you can do it, put your mind to it, you can do anything you want. The title of this message actually, or the series, comes from the idea that in the opening chapters of Matthew's Gospel, which is where we find the story of Jesus' birth, four different times there are people who receive word from God, a message from God through dreams. And actually, instead of you can do it, keep going the way that you want to go, these messages through dreams actually end up redirecting the lives of the people who receive them. And today specifically, we're going to be talking about how some people got rerouted, right? We're going to talk about rerouting through the form of a message received in a dream. We're actually going to look today a little in depth at the wise men of the story, which you are probably familiar with from the nativity scenes and the greeting cards and the clip art and all that goes along with it, all of these wise men. We're going to learn some things about them, but a few things right off the bat that we, I think, take for granted culturally because the wise men have been so deeply ingrained within us. And many of the things that we know to be true are actually not. First of all, they are called wise men in Scripture precisely zero times. They're never called wise men, not even once, right? Some of you know this, any nativity scene that has the shepherds and wise men there at the same time, you can just write it off as completely inaccurate because the wise men, or magi as they're actually called, don't show up on the scene until much, much later, right? And I see some of you nodding. Those are some things that maybe you're already familiar with. But here's another one, for instance, something that we assume. How many wise men were there? Come on, you know the song. We three kings, right? So first of all, nowhere to say there were three. There were three gifts. And we then assume, and it makes it really nice for all the pageants to have one person carrying a gift each, right, with their robes. Doesn't say three. There could have been two, there could have been 20, there could have been 200. We don't know, right? And secondly, they actually probably were not kings. We're going to get into their more likely station in life a little bit later. So as we hear this part of the Christmas story, open your eyes, open your heart to sort of hearing it afresh and anew, to hear what we can hear about rerouting our lives as we listen to the story of the Magi. We'll be in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." And after they had heard from the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And after having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. They were rerouted as they heard in a dream. Now we're going to look a little bit later at that rerouting and what it meant for them and what it might mean for us today. But I want to take a look first at this inspired journey that they chose to take, right? This inspired long journey. And I want to start with this question. What sort of inspirational journeys have you taken in your life? Where have you gone that was sort of an inspirational journey? This is typically a place that was far away, a place of significance, something like that. Perhaps maybe you took an inspirational journey to a place with amazing sights. The picture up here behind me is of the Grand Canyon. I still remember being on a mission trip with a bunch of teenagers in Arizona, and they decided that they wanted to go to see the Grand Canyon, right? And the Painted Desert, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So now, this involved probably about 6 to 7 hours of round-trip driving. And do you know how many of the teenagers stayed awake for the last half of that 6 to 7 hours of round-trip driving? You're right, precisely zero of them did. That once-in-a-lifetime opportunity was provided by their youth sponsors driving the vans all the way back and forth throughout the deserts of Arizona and New Mexico and wherever else it was. So you may take an inspirational journey to see an amazing sight that you can't see around where you are. You might do it to spend time with family or friends. Now, some of us only need to go across town or across the state. Some of us have to go across the country. I just had family in during Thanksgiving from Colorado. So we will make these journeys inspired by spending time with people that we love. Or maybe it's about having a unique experience. Maybe you go somewhere to have an experience that you can never have close to home. Anybody ever seen a video of, I think it's called The Running of the Bulls in Pamplona, Spain? I mean, I'm crazy, but those people are out of their minds. But you can only do that there. It's a unique experience, right? Or maybe you want to make a difference in the world. I've heard of stories of people going on short-term mission trips to some of the poorest parts of the world, maybe into the middle of Africa, because they wanted to make a difference in the world. So these Magi are on an inspired journey. We don't know exactly where they came from. We're just told that they came from the east. Scholars speculate probably Persia or Arabia somewhere, but why did they take this long, challenging, inspired journey? Because they believed that at the end of it, they would meet a person who was truly, truly unique in his identity. That's what they believed was waiting for them at the end of this inspired journey. Three things that we find out that they believed about this person, this child that they would meet. First of all, that Jesus was born a king. Born a king. This is not someone who needed to win battles in order to be proclaimed king. This is not someone who needed to turn heads in order to be proclaimed king. Something about this child gave him the right from his very birth to be called king. King of the Jews. And it's really interesting that these people, these Magi, travel a great distance on this inspired journey to visit the King of the Jews, because almost certainly they were not Jewish. They were Gentiles. So Gentiles taking a long journey to go and find out about the King of the Jews. And it's even more interesting because the nation of Israel would have been a nothing nation on the grand national global scale at this point. For people who are Gentiles, far away from Israel, to get this message to go and see the King of the Jews would be if I said to you, hey, I heard about this child born. I want you to go and see the new prince of Liechtenstein. Does that sound enticing to you? To make a long journey. Anybody know where Liechtenstein is? Oh, a couple. I see a couple hands. Great. Got some fellow geography nerds in the house. That's what I'd like to see. So for those of you that don't know, Liechtenstein, by the way, this is a picture of Liechtenstein. That's not Bethlehem. That's Liechtenstein. Actually, it looks like, what's the city from Frozen? Arendelle? Looks like Arendelle to me before the winter sets in. But Liechtenstein is located in the Alps. It's the only nation on earth located entirely within the Alps. It's a German-speaking nation between Switzerland and Austria. If you want to get there, it's a little tricky. There are no airports in the entire nation. You have to fly into Zurich in Switzerland and then go by road from there. But they actually do still have a prince. So my theoretical go see the Prince of Liechtenstein, that's actually a real thing. Here's how small Liechtenstein is, right? And I think I'm saying it right. Liechtenstein? Yeah, something like that. It's German. It's hard to pronounce. But it is only 62 square miles big. Do you know how big Cleveland is? 78 square miles. So the entire nation is smaller than Cleveland. So if I said to you, go and see the new Prince of Liechtenstein, you'd probably be like, No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm going to check out the Browns game later, right? Because to see the prince of a place you've probably maybe never heard of that is this tiny little Nowheresville. And yet there was something about this star that drew these magi to take this inspired journey all the way to this place that maybe for them was almost meaningless. But not only was Jesus born a king, he was also welcomed into the world with a special sign from the heavens. Scholars think that most likely these wise men were actually astrologers. They were people who were trained to watch the stars. And what I find really interesting about that is that these men who studied the stars, they could tell when something out of the ordinary was happening in the heavens. Now, scholars go back and forth and people debate, what did the star look like? Where was it exactly? Was it a unique star? Was it a miraculous star? Was it a star that just sort of rose in a really strange way? And here's the thing, we don't know. There is nothing in the text that tells us anything specifically about the star. But what I think is important to note is that God spoke to these people in a way that they could understand. He spoke their language. A star rose, and these men who studied the stars were ready to listen and hear the message. And I want to remind you today, God still speaks your language. You may not speak the language of the stars, but God is willing to speak our language. He's willing to condescend to us and speak our language so that we can hear him and so that we can follow him if only we're paying attention. Not only was Jesus born a king and welcomed by the special sign in the heavens, but we're told that Jesus was worthy of worship. Worthy of worship. There are a lot of details we don't know in this story. We don't know much about the Magi, right? How many were there? Not sure. Where exactly did they come from? We don't really know. What did the star look like? We don't have those details. How did they know that this star was to lead them to the King of the Jews? We don't know. And I wonder if maybe part of the reason we don't know all these details is to actually magnify the only detail in this account that matters, that Jesus is worthy of worship. But all these other things, we can talk about them, we can debate them, but at the end of the day, it's that Jesus is worthy of worship, adoration, exaltation, devotion, and allegiance. Their worship is evidenced later because we're told that they bow down and they give of their treasure to Jesus. Now, of course, you know the story. So they give him what treasure? Three things: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I sometimes think about that story and I wonder, we don't know how old Jesus is by this point. Almost certainly not a baby anymore. And if you were to give a baby a chunk of gold and two perfumes made from dried tree sap, which is what those two are, you can look it up. Like, I almost feel like that would be a moment where if you've ever seen a child open a present on Christmas morning or at a Christmas party, and they tear through the wrapper and all of a sudden, oh, clothes. Right? I mean, I look at Jesus thinking, what do you do with a chunk of gold and two casks of sort of perfumey oil, right? But of course, it's not about what Jesus might have done with them. It's the symbolism. Those were royal things. It's communicated again. This is a king, and not just the King of the Jews, but the King of all kings. But I would ask you this question, which we'll kind of revisit maybe a little bit later. What are your treasures, and do they belong to you, or do they belong to Jesus? Have you willingly poured out the treasure of your life in worship to him? Or are you still holding tightly to whatever your treasure might be? Because part of worship is being willing to let go and open up our hands and our arms from holding our treasure too tightly. So the details of your life vary from time to time and season to season. Some details are more important on your journey than others, but the question is, does your journey point you to an encounter with and worship of the King of Kings? Because that's what we see reflected in the story of these Magi. Now, they didn't get to to Jesus to start with. They actually got to Jerusalem, which makes sense, because if you're going to see the King of the Jews, you go to the capital. That's where you expect to find the King of the Jews. So they needed some help along the way, and they get some help from a guy named Herod. So they approach Jerusalem, and they say to Herod, "Hey, we heard about this freshly born King of the Jews. Can you help us find him?" And when we read the story, what does it tell us about Herod's response to hearing this news? That he is disturbed about this freshly born King of the Jews. Why would Herod be disturbed? Well, somebody is already sitting on the throne as King of the Jews, and do you know who that is? Yeah. You can imagine sort of the turmoil of being told, "Hey, we heard that there was someone born to replace you. Can you help us find that person?" No wonder he's disturbed, right? Now, he's actually generally a disturbed person. We'll talk more about him next week. He was famous for helping to rebuild the temple, tons of really good like public works projects, but he was also a little crazy. I mean, he was a tyrant, and he was paranoid to the nth degree. We'll talk more about those details later. But he was disturbed at this news that there is a new King of the Jews threatening his throne. And it was not odd for people like Herod in his day to take very seriously the idea that there's a sign in the heavens that is now speaking against you. It's something that he would have taken extremely seriously. I read a resource this week that said Emperor Nero, a little later down the line, reportedly slaughtered many of his nobles in hopes that their deaths, rather than his, would fulfill a prediction that came through a comet. So they took these things so seriously that when a comet came through and someone felt it was a prediction against him, he just starts killing people, hoping that one of those deaths will suffice for the comet. So we shouldn't be too shocked, given Herod's disposition and his situation, that he is disturbed. And we can see his paranoia, right? Because he quickly consults with his most trusted, knowledgeable advisors. He calls in the scribes and the chief priests, the people who know their stuff. Which is interesting as a side note that the king doesn't know his stuff. But he calls in all these trusted advisors and he's like, "Hey, where is the Messiah going to be born?" And they say, "You know, Bethlehem." And so he gets the information, and then you see his paranoia again because he secretly meets with the Magi. You know you're starting to get more and more paranoid if you need to have secret meetings. So he calls in this secret meeting of the Magi. And he says what to them? He says, "Listen, I want you to go. I want you to search. And as soon as you find this child, please report back to me because I want to worship him along with you." Now, as Paul Harvey would say, we know the rest of the story. However, in the moment, these Magi maybe don't. They've never met Herod before, and if Herod's good at anything, by this point, it's half-truth and deception and manipulation, right? So they may have believed him, that he intended to actually worship this new King of the Jews. One of the messages here with Herod particularly, and the wider story of Jesus' birth, and actually the entirety of the Gospels, is a posture of what I would call critical awareness of the motivations of the people in power. Because we know when we read the text that Herod has no desire to worship Jesus. None, right? This is not the only instance that calls for us to have a critical awareness of people in power. Listen to these words from Mary. It's in the Song of Mary after she visits Elizabeth. And listen to what she says in Luke chapter 1. "He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty." So I would sort of wrap it up by saying this. Be wary of powerful people who try and make you believe that they share your interests and your goals, but could easily have alternate motivations. Be careful of people who come alongside and say, "You can trust me. We're on the same team. I want what you want. Now do me a favor," right? Or something like that. You know, especially if they're people you don't know very well. Because if this story and the story of Jesus' birth and the Gospels teach us anything, this is one of the things we find. It's a critical awareness of the motivations of people like Herod, people who wield influence and power. So they do take his advice. They leave. They go to Bethlehem. And I love the part where it says the star rose and they were overjoyed. They were overjoyed that the quest wasn't over, that there were still steps to go, that they would find the true king that they were seeking out. But after finding Jesus and worshiping, we are told that the Magi did not return to Herod, and they went home another route. Why? Because through a dream, they received this communication from God. They were rerouted. Now, how many of you are familiar with the miraculous thing that is called Google Maps? It's free, but I would pay so much money for Google Maps. Don't tell the Google people. They're probably listening right now. Who are we kidding, right? They know. So I love it for a multitude of reasons, but this might be the biggest reason that I love it. Has anybody experienced when they've been driving along, and typically it just follows you along, but then have you ever been rerouted because of an accident? I will never forget the first time driving through, I think it was Virginia, and all of a sudden my Google Maps, which usually just sits there relatively dormant, it spoke to me and said, there is a slowdown due to an accident on this current route. We have found a faster route for you. Would you like to switch to this alternate route? I have never hit accept more quickly in my entire life. Yes, 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 please, 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 right? Google Maps and its rerouting has saved me minutes, maybe even hours, of my life and the headache that goes along with those wasted minutes sitting there. Because I am willing to be rerouted. These Magi were willing to be rerouted as they heard this communication through the dream. And last week we talked about Joseph and his dream. And I talked a little bit about how I think that Joseph was ready to be obedient to that message because of the foundation he had already laid in his life. We talked about how the text tells us Joseph was obedient to God and merciful to other people. And I really do think that it's that foundation of obedience and mercy that made Joseph ready to hear and respond. I think we see something similar here. Because prior to that dream communication, we see the Magi lay a foundation of what I would call worship and focus. They bowed down to Jesus. They poured out their treasures to him. And the focus to follow that star, who knows how many miles, how many days, intently, faithfully, following that light in the darkness, the glory signifying the arrival of a king they hadn't even met yet. And I'm convinced because they had a foundation of worship and focus that when that dream message came through, they were ready to hear it, to receive it, and to respond to it. And so after their encounter with Herod, they go a different route. And that route may have not been the most efficient way possible. And if you've ever looked at your life and kind of gone, yeah, I can look at it and go, maybe that wasn't the most efficient way possible. The last thing I want to tell you this morning is this. Don't despair the loopy route that God has you on if you still feel confident about your destination. And when I say loopy, I don't mean crazy, although some of you are loopy, and I'm not going to name names. But what I mean is the difference, like for instance, the difference between like block lettering. Block lettering is absolutely straightforward and clear. There is no wasted movement in block lettering. And sometimes life is like that. Everything goes as we expect. Everything is straight, the corners are clean, and we walk along. But sometimes, I don't know about your life, but in mine, certainly, life is a lot more like cursive. Now, full admission, this is embarrassing probably to admit, in college, I realized that I forgot how to write in cursive. I remember I was taking a standardized test, and you had to, at the end of it, you had to copy word for word some paragraph, something about not cheating, whatever it was, and then sign it. So I start to try and write in cursive for the first time in probably 12 years, And like, I'm old enough that they still taught cursive back when I was in school, right? I don't know if my children have learned cursive or not, but maybe they have. I don't know. Yes? Okay, I'm getting a nod. Yes, our children will learn cursive. This is America, after all. I don't know. But I remember writing, and I remember pausing and thinking, I don't know how to make a capital G anymore. Like, I couldn't do it. And I think I hadn't written in cursive for so long because it had become so inefficient. It's a lot easier to write in regular block-style lettering. But here's the thing, right? Sometimes our lives follow these loops and curves and swirls that God takes us on. And as long as we feel confident that we are still directed to the destination that He has for us, it is okay that our life sometimes moves in loops and curls that we did not expect. And I will even say this, when that happens, sometimes we look back and it's actually way more beautiful than we would have ever come up with had we designed it ourselves. So a few things to think about as we finish our time together this morning. Here's the first one. Where are you on the journey toward or with Jesus? Are your eyes fixed on the light of His glory like the Magi fixed on the light of that star? Does your heart overflow with worship? Have you given your treasures over to Him? Secondly, is there anyone in your life, maybe trying to influence your journey, who might actually have ulterior motives in mind? And then lastly, is God leading you to take a different route than you initially expected? Seek discernment from the Spirit if you feel like the path ahead isn't the most obvious or maybe the most straightforward, but might still be the best route for God's unfolding purposes for your life. So take a moment or two to pray. If you want to close your eyes or bow your head, you're welcome to, or just read through the words on the screen. And after a moment, I will close that time of silent reflection with a word of prayer.